It's Matthew, it's chapter 21, and it starts at verse 1. As they approached Jerusalem and came to Bethpage on the Mount of Olives, Jesus sent two disciples, saying to them, "Go to the village ahead of you, and at once you will find a donkey tied there with her colt by her. Untie them and bring them to me. If anyone says anything to you, say that the Lord needs them, and he will send them right away." This took place to fulfill what was spoken through the prophet. "Say to the daughter of Zion, see, your king comes to you, gentle and riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey." The disciples went and did as Jesus had instructed them. They brought the donkey and the colt, placed their cloaks on them, and Jesus sat on them. A very large crowd spread their cloaks on the road, while others cut branches from trees and spread them on the road. The crowd that went ahead of him and those that followed shouted, "Hosanna to the Son of David. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Hosanna in the highest." When Jesus entered Jerusalem, the whole city was stirred and asked, "Who is this?" The crowd answered, "This is Jesus, the prophet from Nazareth in Galilee." Ever since I was a little girl, I have loved Palm Sunday, confession time. It's always filled me with a feeling of anticipation, just as much as a run-up to Christmas, really. It's nearly Easter. Spring has sprung. There is a promise of much chocolate. And you got given a palm cross at church, which meant hours of fun poking people with it, pulling it apart to see how it was made, then trying to put it back together again. Small things. But I loved Palm Sunday too, and still do, because it's a great and joyful chapter in God's story. It's so full of life, animal, trees, streets, people, countryside, and in my mind, a story so full of excitement and movement and wonderful spontaneity. I was one of those little girls who never really dared to be naughty or get dirty, and was really scared of hurting myself. I was the original can't ride a bike, can't do a handstand, can't roller skate kid. Yeah, I was a bit of a wimp. Still am, really. But underneath, there was a tomboy just trying to get out. So I loved all this stuff about throwing coats on the ground, dreamed of going home all mucky, trying to explain to my mum that my coat was dirty and torn because a donkey had walked over it. Yes. Or that my hands and knees were all dirty because I'd been breaking bits off trees. Can't climb trees either. Tried once, got stuck, was up there a long time, had to be helped down. So the thought of climbing up trees to pull bits off and wave or throw on the ground filled me with a feeling of freedom and joy and anticipation. Something truly different and wonderful was going to happen. And as I grew, the thought of grown-ups taking risks and bending rules was particularly joyful. Here was Jesus telling his disciples to go and borrow a colt. That's just so wrong. If you really think this through, Jesus must have been so trusting in people's goodwill, so confident in his own journey, and in the loyalty of his disciples who went off to go borrowing, seemingly without arguing. The colt was someone else's property. In the Ten Commandments, you weren't even supposed to covet your neighbour's ass, never mind borrow a stranger's. No wonder the bystanders were saying in Mark's version, "What are you doing untying that colt?" Oh, Jesus needs it. That's all right then. So here is Jesus, in my child's eyes, a big man on a little dubiously borrowed donkey, skittering about with people and children dancing and shouting, ripping off their coats and clapping their handfuls of trees. What a feeling of freedom and anticipation. Something wonderful was surely going to happen. All we have to do is keep our eyes on the man on the donkey. Because who is this? Can you see him through a child's eyes? Man on a donkey, who are you? Where are you going? You make me laugh and feel so brave and free. But in my child's eyes, as the sun began to dip and the walls rose up, the jubilant figure of this man on a donkey also cast long, dark and disturbing shadows, shadows which I didn't yet understand. I have a very vivid memory of myself as a teenager, 16, walking home from school, eating a chocolate egg, without really care in the world, opening my front door and going into the front room where my mum and my auntie were sitting closer together than I'd ever seen them sit. I'll never forget their faces. They'd been told my dad's illness was terminal, and now they had to tell me. And in that moment, and in what followed, I began to gain an understanding of how this moment of abandonment and hope was a moment of light because of suffering and darkness, and why the palms we were given were in the shape of a cross. I began to see this entry into Jerusalem in a different way, to see in the anticipation not the fulfillment of a child's dream of freedom, but an end to suffering. The joy was because of sadness, the expectation because of shattered hopes, the offering of loyalty because of betrayal, the humility and freedom of welcome because of humiliation, oppression, and the need to find home. There were not only carefree children on that road into Jerusalem that day, but a whole people waiting to be liberated. Jesus had said in the Gospel of Luke 4 that the Spirit of the Lord was upon him, that he had been anointed to preach good news to the poor, to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour. People on that road were waiting to be liberated from occupying Roman forces, from Caesar's regime, from their own shepherds of Israel who only take care of themselves, to quote Ezekiel 34. They were waiting to be liberated from all their suffering and oppression. They had high hopes. They were waiting for a Messiah, the one to usher in God's new and promised kingdom. It was written in their history, on their foreheads, in their hearts. And as this Jesus rode into Jerusalem, that's later, they were euphoric with expectation, born of years of waiting and suffering. Their oppression had been long, their language fear, their history violent, enemies within and enemies without, their daily living a grind of poverty from which only God could deliver them. So as well as children that day, might there have been those who were filled with anger at these injustices and expecting Jesus to bring a revolution. They knew who he was. They'd heard stories of his powerful healings and teachings. They were keeping their eyes on the man on the donkey. Watch him closely. That donkey's a ruse. He's lulling them all into a false sense of security. He will be the one to bring down the evil regime. He will be the one to inspire us and free us, to give us the strength to finish them off. Look at him. He's close enough to touch. Remember Isaiah 50. He who vindicates me is near. Who then will bring charges against me? Let's face each other. Who are my accusers? Let them confront me. Because of him, we will be strong enough to pull down the statues of Caesar and bring down all the corrupt and reinstate our own rule and make the streets safe once more. What a time that will be. Look at him A big man on a little donkey will be forever the symbol of the end of injustice, the beginning of a revolution, a new beginning. Something wonderful is going to happen. Everything will be different. Just keep your eyes on the man on the donkey. And as well as children and those waiting to rise up, might there have also been those so ground down by it all that they were glad he was just a man on a donkey, humble, unpretentious. He was one of them, and his good news was for them too. This was a pauper's procession, no red carpets or gifts or trumpet fanfares. All the wealth and power was within the city walls, in the hands of the temples and the Romans. All they had were the clothes they stood up in, so they threw them. All they had were things that grew, so they waved them. But they knew who he really was. This was Jesus from nowhere Nazareth. But they'd heard he taught the extra mile, and he'd walked on water and brought people back from the dead, that he'd done even more than Moses, and he'd called that frightening, jealous God of theirs, Abba, Father. They expected the very hand of the Lord to raise and bring them freedom. Look at him, how low he is. He's close enough to touch. Remember Zechariah 9. See, your king comes to you, righteous and having salvation, gentle and riding on a donkey. I will take away the chariots from Ephraim, he's promised, and the war horses from Jerusalem, and the battle bow will be broken, as will the screen. He will proclaim peace to the nations. Like the great Red Sea rolling onto Pharaoh's soldiers, this man will use God's power to save us from our enemies. Yes, he looks humble now, even a bit comical on that donkey. But just you wait, it's all a disguise. He will throw off his humility like some discarded cloak as soon as he gets into Jerusalem. God's trumpet will sound, and the walls will come tumbling down. We'll all be saved, and God will rebuild the city like he promised, and we'll be living it up like in old King David's palace, all our wealth restored, and singing the old psalms. Who is this King of glory? The Lord strong and mighty, the Lord mighty in battle. Hosanna to the Son of David. Hosanna, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Hosanna in the highest. Better keep your eyes on the man on the donkey. Who is this King of glory? Who are you, man on a donkey? Where are you going? You make me full of hope. You make me feel so brave and free. Who are you, King of glory? Aren't you the Messiah, ready to swing wide the gates for us? Who are you, man on a donkey, slowly, carefully steering a colt along a cloth-covered rocky road? What is this strange extra mile you are going? Are you really here to herald the end of one regime and the beginning of another? Or are you here for vindication or for power? Will you go so far as to batter down the doors of palaces? Could you really be here simply to relieve our suffering and affliction through divine power? You ask me to keep my eyes upon you, man on the donkey. But just why are you here? And just how far will you go? At the beginning of this month, husband Nige and my daughter Julia, plus her friend Gemma, did the Anglesey Half Marathon. I'm enjoying running again too, but not that far. I was content to carry the kit. But it filled me with memories of one of Julia's first races as an adult. She'd been going through a tough time, and she wanted to do something different, so I dusted off my running shoes and did a race with her. It was down in London a few years back, It was us and about 250,000 other bonkers people who ran the sport relief mile. Or three, I did three, or six, Julia did six, she's still doing more than me. And it was along the embankment. And I've never seen so many truly different and wonderfully new ways of going the distance. Yeah, there were the race fit and the celebrities, Eddie Izzard doing yet another marathon. There were the ubiquitous gorilla suits and lions and Scooby-Doos. But there were also people walking their dogs or space hopping. There were four superheroes and they gaffer-taped their legs together for the ultimate eight-legged race. There were sack jumpers and dads jogging with their children on their shoulders. There were people on crutches and in wheelchairs. A big man riding a donkey who'd creatively taught us in Matthew 7 to face our enemies by going the extra mile. I'm sure you were there somewhere. For you were going the distance, the extra mile, and had chosen a truly different and awesomely new way. In the Gospel of Luke, you had asked the disciples to go and find a colt that had never been ridden. Yeah, donkeys were an accepted way of travelling. They were ridden all the time, but not this donkey. Never been ridden. And yes, the promise of God saving his people was accepted and waited for all the time, but not this way. The way of humility you chose was something new, untried, dangerous, risky. You were Creator God, after all. You would not use the people's anger at their own oppression to rise up and fight. You would not break bruised reeds. You would not use divine power in a power struggle. Your humility was not a cloak you could discard. It was written on your heart. The hand of God was one you would not raise except to put the cup of suffering to your lips. Your path of liberation was not the way of gaining power. It was a way of giving power away. Can we look at you at all, man on a donkey? For you rode upon another prophecy that day. Isaiah 53. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him. Nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by others, a man of sorrows and familiar with suffering. Did any hear those words when the trumpets didn't sound, when the sword wasn't drawn, when our cries of joy and expectation turned to confusion, disappointment, and we looked around for someone to blame? And he was despised and rejected by others. As our cries for justice and liberation turned to shouts for the release of the worst criminal. And he was wounded for our transgressions. As his friends desert him during an illegal trial with an unjust and terrible outcome, he was crushed for our iniquities. And as a crowd, we act like sheep and go astray, no longer wondering, who is this King of Glory, but shouting, where this crown of thorns? No longer, here is God come to save us, but prove you are God, save yourself. For his journey to Jerusalem, Jesus chose to go the distance on a donkey that had been borrowed. Until the disciples untied it, it had been meant for someone else. And Jesus went the distance of our sin, the extra miles on miles on miles to death and beyond, by taking on the punishment that we deserved, that should have been for us. And the Lord laid on him the iniquity of us all. You came humbly to a city that expected a Messiah, and a Messiah they got, but not the one they expected. So who are you, King of Glory? Can we see you through forgiven eyes? You came into a city that expected to be freed from the powers that be, but you came to free us all from the powers of sin and death. You came to a people who expected God's new kingdom of glory, and a kingdom you ushered in, but one which wasn't about riches replacing poverty, or even peace replacing war, but about mercies kissing justice on the shores of all our lives, about transformation and a new start with a God who loves us and is here. Who is the King of Glory? The one who came not to conquer or to be elevated, but to be committed to serve the world as it is every step of that rocky way. To serve the world as it is, even now, wars and all, our world, so full of high and low, and rich and poor, fast and slow, ambitious and confused, elite runners in lycra and disabled children with fairy wings, lone runners and bonded friends, paratroopers with full kit and wounded soldiers on crutches, dads with children on their shoulders, mums with dogs and buggies, people who need to be led, people who need to be carried, teenagers tearing off without the need to pace, pensioners counting every step, superheroes and bananas and lions and Scooby-Doo, all doing the distance in different ways, at different paces, but however far, however long, all with the promise of the same cheerleaders along the way, the promise of the same applause at the end, the same welcome and smiling, well done, the same medal, the same reward, because the King of Glory did the extra mile for us. Who is this King of Glory, this man on a donkey? We will only know if we keep our eyes upon him, even when we cannot look at him. We will only know if we follow him. We might follow him like many in the crowd that day, serving ourselves and expecting much but never understanding how much. Or we might follow him like him, as servants of the kingdom of love, prepared to risk being vulnerable and staying vulnerable, being humble and staying humble, committed to the extra mile, committed to life wherever it takes us, committed to others, whoever we encounter. The Palm Sunday story, with its spontaneous joy and lengthening shadows, asks us to acknowledge that, yeah, if we're honest with ourselves, we probably follow quite often both as crowd and servant. But still, it bids us come just as we are and follow that big man on a little donkey, never taking our eyes off him, along the rocky path, one joyous, painful step at a time, towards Easter, through Easter, and beyond.